Welcome everybody. So today is 13 July. Bad day. I mean, for Chinese, 13 is really good though. For Westerners, 13 is bad luck. For Chinese, it's good luck. So this evening, I would like to begin with one of the teaching of the Buddha that he gave to Ananda. So at once, and Ananda, he's the assistant of the Buddha. So one morning he went out for alms rounds. During the Buddha's times, he went out to alms rounds. And one of the lady went to this went to Venerable Ananda. He asked Ananda, this lady asked Ananda. And she said, "My father-in-law just passed away. Not long ago. But when he passed away, they asked the Buddha, where is his father-in-law reborn? You know, where did he go?" Then the Buddha told her that her father-in-law reborn in the Tusita realm. This is one of the heavenly realm. And she said that her father-in-law, especially in the later life, that he's been like living a celibate life, like keeping 8 precepts, and he's practicing really very diligently. But how is it come about? How come another person in the village, this lady said, and she saw this person just live an ordinary content household life. Like he's only keeping 8 precepts. He, in his later life, he didn't live a celibate life. But when he passed away, then someone went to the Buddha and asked the Buddha, "Where did he reborn? Where did he go?" And then the Buddha said that he also reborn in the Tusita realm. So then this lady said, "How come? It seems like this person have a better quality than that person. But how come this person also reborn in the same place, you know, in the heavenly realm?" And actually, so talk about heavenly realm is remind me of a joke. And there's a man, he just died. And then he have to go to this judgment. So, and St. Peter told him that, you know, before you see God, but, you know, I have to talk to you, you know, because I have looked over your life. And I have to be really honest to you. Because throughout your whole life, you haven't done anything particularly good or bad. So I find that it's very difficult to make any decisions. Can you help me, you know? Can you think of any things that you have done that particularly, you know, really good, you know, so that you can help me to make a decision? Because we constantly judge ourselves. So if you think that you can't, you will not try, isn't it? You will not even put in effort, you know, to put into practice, you know, that you don't. Because you think that it's impossible, it's not for me, it's only for those, you know, special beings. So it's very important that the Buddha's teaching, that if we keep reflecting on this non-self, develop the perception of non-self. When you see non-self, you see this impermanent. So things come and go, whether you like it or not. So when we see the impermanent, we become more appreciative. Appreciative of this moment, appreciative of what we got, because we always take it for granted. We always take it for granted. We think that, you know, for example, we think that we always find fault. It's not good enough. So when we have this, you know, we know that this thing is not going to last, we become more appreciative and we make the most of it while we got it. So when we have these pleasant feelings arises, we enjoy that moment. So we don't try to interfere, we don't try to hold on to it and try to make it stay longer. So we have these unpleasant feelings, it's all fine because it's a past, it's not going to stay. So then this is how, then we see the impermanent, then we see that it's suffering. So then we understand suffering. we know that this is just part of life. No matter what we do, it's not going to be perfect. So this is part of life. So the more we can understand suffering, the more we can see where's the suffering coming from. It's not what we're experiencing is a problem. It's how we relate to the experience. That is most important. That's like, that is, this is one of the ways that we develop this when we reflect on that, and it's helped us to develop this perception of non-self. So when we see that it's non-self, so we don't try to own it, because the bigger the ego it is, the easier we get hurt. And we get upset easily. So when we have this loving kindness, we're accepting, that is loving kindness. We accept who we are. We at ease and at peace who we are, and we have to start with where we at. So this loving kindness, even towards our own defilements, accepting who we are. So it's fine. Because sometimes we are not accepting, we're fighting, constantly fighting. It causes more suffering for ourselves. So this is a very gradual training. All we need to do, we have to keep practicing and keep practicing. That's right. And slowly then we have to wear out the energy. You know, it's just that, you know, it's not going to, for example, like we experience anger. So it's not going to go away immediately. But if we not react reinforce or we push it away of our emotion, so next time when there's a similar situation, it will become less intense. But it's still there. You know, the defilement is still there. But it's become less intense. But if we keep on continue to practice, then the defilement becomes weaker and weaker, and eventually it will eliminate, it disappear, it subside. It's a gradual training. So that's why it's important that we don't judge ourselves. So if you don't judge yourself, we have the confidence in ourselves. So it's not only a special beings, not only only monks and nuns only can do it. No. Even you can see that from the Buddhists, you know, even some people apparently seems like that the defilements is very gross, and they got enlightened. So never judge yourself. You never know. So that's why it's important. If you don't judge yourself, you don't judge others. So when you don't judge yourself, you have a loss of confidence in yourself that is possible. So I offer this for your reflections, and may this teaching be of benefit to all of you. Thank you for listening. So any questions or comments? The first question is, how do I deal with a person who is ignorant, negative, and have bad karma? None of our business, isn't it? Sometimes we can't change. I mean, yeah, we try, we can do our best. The only thing that we can change ourselves. We can't avoid to be with people that are negative, that is ignorant, you know. The most important thing, how we relate to that person, you know, because we can't change others. We can only change ourselves. Just imagine if I think that, you know, I got to change Sister Opeka, I had to change all the nuns in the monastery, I'd be very busy all the time, isn't it? So, yes, sometimes we do with people is ignorant, negative, and have bad karma, so we have this compassion. Compassion is not a matter of, oh, I feel sorry for you, I pity for you. If the near enemy of compassion is pity, that is come from the ego. A true compassion, we have the understanding. The understanding, the person's situation, the person suffering, how the person see things, how the person's the situation. Because come from our own experience, the more we understand our own suffering, then we become more compassionate. We understand the suffering of others. So the only way we can deal with people that is ignorant, negative, and have a bad karma, we have compassion. Because we can understand through the understanding of the suffering of the other person. Because if someone negative, it's lots of suffering. Because when you have negative emotion, it's very draining. You feel very tired. And it's very unpleasant. So that person is suffer. If you can see that person is suffer, then you have compassion. You deal with that compassion with the person and not try to change that person, but have compassion towards that person. So the question two is, if I have tried my best practicing the path, but it's still not free of negative state of mind at the end of this life, will I still be get a good rebirth? Oh, I'm not the Buddha. Oh, I can't guarantee you. And because sometimes that this is the worry. You know, when we worry something in the future, that is the negativity towards the future. So sometimes that it's rather than we worry about what things might and might not happen, so we make the most of it now. We practice now because now it's just like a perpuncture. It's just like a speculation. You see, we don't know, isn't it? Rather than we spend all our time, you know, project what is going to happen, worrying and what about the future, what is going to happen. So we bring our mind back to this moment. If we be able to live in this moment, moment by moment, take one day at a time. So one day at a time. So this moment. So we don't know what is going to happen in the future. So if we be able to live in this moment, and only one moment you have no negativities, then we create the next moment. So then it's easier. Because sometimes when, you know, it's the same thing. Like, for example, like myself, also very busy. I have lots of things to do. Sometimes it's not how much work that you do that is really matter. Sometimes, like, because we're thinking about it, that is the problem. That's lots of, because the moment you think, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do that. And then you spend half a day thinking about what you're going to do, and then you haven't started to do anything yet. You know, one thing at a time, you start to do, you know, we prioritize what is more important. So we take one thing at a time. So we don't project into the future, you know, what happened if I'm still not free of negativities, you know, end of this life. So, because it's just project, and then we spend our energy, wasting our time and energy, isn't it? And worry about the future. This moment is important. Never underestimate the power of now. So, living in the moment, present moment at Venice, we live from moment to moment, this moment, even only if we have only one moment of positiveness. So you create the next positive moment, isn't it? So then the next and the next. So when you look at like that, it's doable, isn't it? But you look at this, whoa, lifelong. Then you think that it's very difficult. So you break it down one day at a time, this moment. One moment at a time. One moment of positiveness. So you create the next positive moment. So the next positive moment, you create the next and the next and the next. It's just like the water, each drops, drop by drop. Eventually, it will fill the whole bucket. So that is not to worry too much, you know, about our future. So now is important. Live in the moment. Question three. John from Calcutta. Could you kindly explain briefly how to believe in yourself, especially when you have been laid off from work several times? How to overcome the anger over who sacked you? Thanks. Yes, being sad is not a good thing, isn't it? It's very upset, isn't it? Yeah, and actually, belief in ourselves. Actually, this have to come is a very because this is a whole path of practice. You see, so if we want the first thing that we want to believe in ourselves, the first thing that we have to trust ourselves. So the trust is important. So when we trust ourselves, then we'll be able to really believe ourselves. But of course, it's not easy. So, and it's especially, you know, like a lot of people just always come to me, they want me to give them the, straightforward answer, you know, and give them like a recipe, you know, okay, I give you the answer, okay, you do that, okay, you solve your problem. I can't solve your problem, you know. If I can do that, you know, if I can give you the secret recipe I got enlightened long ago. So actually, you have to take up the whole path of practice. So the first thing, actually, with the morality. The morality is the foundation of a peaceful mind. Without the morality, it's very difficult. A lot of people come to Buddhism, they think that they just meditate. You can't. You got to have the supported by the morality. When you have strengthened your, you know, you have to remove the coarser level of defilements first. Purify our bodily action and speech. Then you have a peaceful mind. So when we have a peaceful mind, then we've developed this wisdom, and this is a whole path of practice. And this anger, you can do loving kindness meditation to help to overcome the anger, but you still have to keep the precept to be to have the morality to support, because a lot of people think that they just sit on the cushions of may I be well, may I be happy, and then they try to use loving kindness to get rid of the anger, and it doesn't work that way. The loving kindness I remember someone tell me that sometimes we do loving kindness, it's just like putting honey over the sheet. May I be well, may I be happy, and they still, the more they do it, the more angry they feel. It's true, because they try to use it as a technique to suppress the emotion, and it doesn't work. Because when you keep the precept, because the precept, if you live a virtuous life, because the five precepts is all rooted in the first one, non-harming, non-violent, not including ourselves, not harming ourselves and others. So when we keep that well, we are naturally kind. We naturally have the loving kindness and compassion. When we have that, that helps us to weaken our anger. Then with that, based on that, and we can practice loving kindness meditation. That is help. Loving kindness meditation is based on the understanding that we sincerely wish ourselves well. So we look at our own loveliness, the whatever good that we have done, the good qualities in ourselves, then we just consciously bring that up. Reflect on our own goodness. If you can't find anything good about yourself, it's fine. You still can wish yourself well, isn't it? Send yourself good wishes. May I be well, may I be sincerely wish yourself well. That is true loving kindness. Because you say, oh, okay, if you are good, I love you. You are no good, I don't love you. So true loving kindness is unconditioned. So send loving kindness, practice loving kindness towards ourselves. It's one of the way to overcome, you know, that anger. And also can send loving kindness towards that. The person, like the person who set you, you know, then you have loving kindness. Because sometimes that we have to look at that person, that they have their own, you know, sometimes like because that person set you, that because he also have his own reason why he do so, isn't it? Because it's easy for us to complain about the other person, you know, but the other person also have his own, you know, suffering too, you know. Sometimes he got to make decision. So if the person don't sack you, maybe he has to be the hierarchy will sack him, you know. So sometimes you have kindness, compassion towards ourselves and to others, and this is not like we can just overcome this, you know, overnight. It's really this, especially this part of practice. The Buddha said, you know, this is a training the mind. So training the mind is just like the bodybuilder. You build the body, you know. It's not happen overnight. So you have to keep practicing. Then only you can overcome. You cannot do it overnight. Like the bodybuilder, you cannot say, I go to, you know, to the gym, you know, for one day, I stop one day, 3 days, and I do it again one day, and I stop 3 days, you know. The muscle will never build up. The mental muscle is the same. We have to keep practicing. So we keep in the precept. So daily life, day to day, mindfulness, you know, living in the moment, try to pay attention to our everyday, you know, in our daily life, whatever we do. So we try to pay attention moment to moment awareness, and that to develop the mindfulness, then that we carry over to this sitting, when we sit to practice this samadhi, this focus, the mind, the focus of the mind, the concentration. So when we have a strong mindfulness, then that is help, because this mindfulness and stillness, they go hand in hand together. It support that. Then it's important. Then we have to practice meditation. So and everyday life and day to day, you know, everyday daily mindfulness, sitting in meditation, keeping the precepts. That is the whole path of practice. This training, we have to take up the whole path of practice. We cannot only choose one. We cannot set only a practice meditation. If you don't keep the precept, it doesn't work. So it's just like you're making a cake. We cannot set that only put flour to bake a cake. You can't, isn't it? So the same thing. So it will not happen overnight. So it takes a long time. So I hope that is answer this person's questions. Any more questions or comments?
Yes? Can I say something?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Ajahn Hasapana, you know, the suffering, you know, in Buddhism, which we read, we hear and talk about, it's actually our feelings, isn't it? The feeling brought about from our mind, the five aggregates. Isn't it? What do you think? It's the feeling.
Because the suffering is come from the feeling itself is not a problem. You know, whatever we experience is not a problem. The holding on, the clinging on to the object, that is the problem. Like I always like to tell people this one of the Theragatas. I really like one of the enlightened monks, because when I read this, it really struck me so hard, and I mentioned it quite a few times. So I mentioned again, and this monk, he's an enlightened monk. So he wrote a gatha, you know, when he's got enlightened. So he used to practice this asupa practice. So contemplations of the foulness of the body. So as usual, this monk went to the chana grounds to contemplate on this asupa practice, the contemplations of this founders. Then in front of him, there was a female corpse, and it started to really quite bad, like bloated, and it's really smelly. And he was doing that contemplation. So, and while he was doing the contemplation, he has this lust aroused in him. And that moment, he was really disgusted that how come, you know, this body is really disgusting and I have lust aroused in me. And that moment, actually, he got enlightened because he realized that it's not the female body is a problem. Is what arising in his mind and the holding on. Because if you leave it alone, you'll be able to just let it arising and pass away. Then it's just observe the arising and the passing away of all the feelings. It's just the feelings. The feelings come and go. But the suffering is come from the holding on, that we make it to be me and mine. We try to own the feelings. That's the suffering. You got what I mean?
Sorry, can just a discussion, okay? Yeah. But don't you think it's the feeling, you know, the bad feeling or the negative? That's the suffering. That's what I think. I might be wrong. It's just a discussion.
The suffering is come from the holding on. Like, for example, if you have the right understanding, you know that this thing come and go, it will not bother you, it's just feelings. It's just feeling. Because it's come and go. You know? So that's why the Buddha said we have this distorted view. We take it to be something solid. Yeah. We make it solid. Mm.
But for a normal person who doesn't know all this,
yes.
That is that suffering, isn't it?
Yeah. Because they make it to be me and mine. They try to make it solid.
Yeah. It's the feeling then, isn't it, for a normal person? Yeah. Sorry.
When we don't see things as they really are, it's a suffering. Even, you know, it's just like, non-self is not that there's nothing there. It's just like the Buddha said, you can't say that is nothing because the arising can be seen. And you cannot say that is something. The ending of thing can be seen. So it's neither here or there, you know what I mean? But because we make it to be something, you know, solid, that is the suffering, that is the clinging. Clinging, holding on, that is the cause of the suffering.
Okay. Anyway, thank you.
Okay. Yes, any more questions or comments? Sooner than we can just...